You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Avec Eric, a show that debuts at 4:30 on PBS this coming Sunday, Chef Eric Ripert ventures out of his kitchen at Le Bernardin to visit some of the locales that have inspired his cuisine. In the opening episode, he hunts wild boar in the rain in the hills of Tuscany, then returns home to his apartment to cook a succulent pork loin. It's not exactly what one might expect from the head chef of a restaurant famous for its fish dishes. Le Bernardin has been given a 4-star rating by the New York Times, has held that rating longer than any other restaurant in the city. Michelin has awarded it 3 stars, which is its top rating. And Eric Ripert was also awarded Outstanding Chef of the Year by the James Beard Foundation in 2003. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hi, Eric. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've said that you love to be on television when it's without boundaries. Are there usually boundaries?
Well, yes, of course, many times. And what I like about the PBS and public television is that you can basically do whatever you want, and you don't even have to have a script. And they supported our idea doing the show, which is a little bit, the beginning of the show is a little bit at Le Bernardin in the kitchen. So it's the back of the house. It's basically having a VIP pass backstage.
And seeing the things that we never see.
Something that you never see, really. And then traveling for inspiration and going to beautiful places, but also traveling to talk and interact with interesting people.
Well, you've been on Top Chef many times. Did you ever consider having young chefs compete to be your next sous chef? You wouldn't want to do that. That's the kind of limiting show I imagine you were thinking about.
Well, actually, right now on Top Chef, we have a chef from our restaurant in Philadelphia that's competing in a Top Chef. Not like I asked her to do so. She wanted to be on the competition, so she went, and right now she's competing on Top Chef.
I hope she doesn't embarrass you.
She has been good.
What kinds of food destinations will you travel to during the show's 10-week run?
We went to California, Northern California. We went to Italy, mostly in Tuscany and Chianti. And then we shot, of course, in New York.
You went to Dan Barber's Blue Hill at Stone Barns near Tarrytown, New York. Now, that is a unique restaurant here. In France, there are a lot of restaurants that have their own gardens anyway, and often are so close to a farm that it's almost the same sort of thing. But not here.
Well, in New York, obviously, we don't have that, except if you are where Dan is, which is outside the city.
And right in the middle of a farm.
Yes. But what is very interesting about his project is that it's totally sustainable. And the way they use animals to create a dynamic in the fields and the gardens and all organic and so on, that was very inspiring.
Many people say that New York is the best food city in the world because even though we may not have the best French restaurant in the world, we have very good ones. We may not have the best Italian, but we have very good ones. We have the very good Chinese restaurants, and you can go down the line. And in the end, you can eat very well in almost every kind of cuisine. Is that something that's reflected in the show as well?
Probably, because in New York, I think we have created what I like to call smart fusion. And it makes sense because if you are a chef and you are inspired by your surrounding, obviously all those ethnicities living together in a city have to inspire you. And therefore, you mix ingredients with your own culture and your own techniques that you have learned.
At Le Bernardin, the focus of most of the dishes is on fish. But in the very first episode of the show, we find you wild boar hunting in Tuscany. And then you're back, as I said, to make a pork loin with mushrooms, shallots, and herbs. Was this a deliberate choice to move away from the food you're most famous for?
Well, I'm a chef, obviously, and I'm also a cook at home, and I'm a cook at core. And I have been trained to cook everything, and except pastry, because I'm a very lousy pastry chef. So the pastry, let's forget about it. However, I love how to cook meat. I love, of course, how to cook fish. And so for me, I have no problem to be after a wild boar and then be taking care of it.
Michelin rarely gives 3 stars to a fish restaurant, at least in France. Why is that? Because it seems to me fish is really hard to cook.
Fish is well, everything can be hard to cook eventually, but fish is it's very, very delicate, the flavors, and it's very easy to overwhelm the delicate flavors of the fish. So it's not too many restaurants that are specialized in seafood, it's true.
And it's also, with fish, you can. There's a very thin line between undercooked, cooked just right, and overcooked.
Yes, and it's a matter of seconds. It's not a matter of minutes.
So how do you know? I mean, do you see it, or do you smell it, or is it just instinctive?
Fish never smell like fish. Yes, we can see a little bit, but we have a technique. We use a metal skewer that we insert through the flesh of the fish. And when the metal skewer comes back on your hand, it should be warm. And that gives you the information that the fish is cooked to perfection. If it's hot, it's well done. If it's cold, it's raw.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that I don't do at home. I should be doing this,
You should
right?
be doing that, yes. It has to be a metal skewer because the metal conduces the heat much better than wood.
What are some of the most common mistakes that everyday cooks make when they're cooking fish?
The shopping part. I think you need to create a relationship with a fishmonger, or you need to have a little bit of expertise when you shop, because it's a lot of fish that is not very fresh. And therefore, when you cook it, it's disgusting, and the house smell, and nobody wants to eat it, really.
They say the eyes have to really be glistening.
Oh, the fish shouldn't smell like fish when you go at the store, and you should ask the fishmonger to smell your fish. If the fillet has a little bit of blood lines, they should be bright red, not a dark chocolate color. And those little tricks, you know, make a huge difference.
Do you insist on wild fish and fish that is line caught? Because now when we go into a fish store, some of them are actually labeling that way.
Yes, and I think it's very important to support line caught and artisanal fishing and to use wild fish. I'm not a fan of farm-raised fish because, first of all, the fish lives in a very small space, which is, I think, cruel to the animals. And on top of it, they eat food which is very cheap, I guess. And that gives, for the consumer, when you taste the fish, kind of a bad flavor in the mouth.
My guest is Eric Ripair, who is starring in his own PBS TV show now, although he's done a lot of TV in the past. The show is called Avec Eric, and it premieres this coming Sunday at 4:30 in the afternoon. We'll be running for 10 weeks. You talked about the cruelty of the fish. You've been a Buddhist since your 20s. Have you ever seriously considered becoming a vegetarian?
No. I haven't. And it's okay to be a Buddhist and to be an omnivore. I mean, the human nature is to be omnivore. And very few people can become vegetarian or vegan and stay healthy. And for whoever is interested in Buddhism, the Dalai Lama himself, who's a great authority in Tibetan Buddhism, cannot be on a diet that will be only vegetarian.
You in the first show, you start off by talking to your associé. Now, restaurants have sauces, and sauces, your restaurant has these fabulous sauces that go perfectly with the fish that you serve, and you have some non-fish dishes. But people don't cook sauces at home very much, do they?
They should. I mean, I don't know if they don't cook sauce at home, but I think sauce is something that enhances the quality of the main ingredient that you are cooking. We have a mantra at Le Bernardin, which is the fish is the star of the plate, which means all our efforts in cooking are to elevate the fish. And the sauce is, I think, one of the most important ingredients that will enhance those qualities.
But when I go to a restaurant, I go to eat things that I don't normally cook at home. And I understand that the restaurant has all sorts of opportunities that I don't have. First of all, there's great equipment. There are professional chefs. The ingredients are probably from places that I can't even buy things from. So should I even be attempting to make restaurant food at home?
Well, restaurant food at times can be as simple as just, let's suppose you have a great fresh fish, you can do a ceviche. Therefore, you need lime, onion, and cilantro. And it's restaurant food as well.
You just have to make sure you buy a really fresh fish.
Yes, of course. But some sauce can be not complicated and be fast to make. I mean, if you make a nice mustard vinaigrette and find some fresh herbs at the market or in your garden and mix it and serve it with a piece of fish, you're going to have something really fantastic.
So you don't think that we should be making our own stocks at home?
You can make your, I mean, if you have the patience and the equipment and the budget, you can make stocks and therefore create some sauce which are very rich.
Some people think that we're watching a lot more food being made than actually making it ourselves on places like the Food Network. Michael Pollan wrote in the New York Times Magazine a few weeks ago that although Americans spend quite a bit of time watching other people cook on television, they spend less and less time cooking at home. Is that your sense?
I must say, I mean, the article was interesting. I kind of disagree. I think whoever brings attention to food in the media, in the newspapers, in the magazines, on television, it's positive for people to be eventually interested to buy good food and eventually try food at home. 20 years ago, nobody was giving attention to my industry or the cooking industry or for the ingredients. And today we have all that attention, and it can be only positive ultimately. Yes, maybe a lot of people are watching and they're not cooking, but I'm sure it's a lot of people who are cooking because of the inspiration.
Well, we've been thinking a lot about people who wrote great cookbooks recently, because there is the film about Julia Child.
Yes.
And then Sheila Lukens died just yesterday. And the Silver Palette Cookbook was a Bible for many people.
Yes.
Do you look at cookbooks?
I look at cookbooks when they have a lot of pictures, because I like the visuals. I never read cookbooks. I don't read recipes, but I get inspired by, of course, the seasons and by some chefs who create great food.
But you're basing your dishes on classic recipes, aren't you? So where did you learn them?
Well, I learned in a kitchen, on very traditional kitchen in France. My first kitchen was La Tour d'Argent, and then
I started at the top.
Yes, for sure. And then I worked with Joël Robuchon, who's an authority, but also the king of the classic. I worked with Jean-Louis Paladin, who had classic training as well. But then when I went to the Bernardin, I think we mix classic techniques with other influence.
Well, can you just imagine, let's say you have a piece of fish. Can you imagine what's going to happen when you add a certain herb to it as opposed to another herb, whether you use this wine rather than that wine
totally.
In the sauce?
Totally. The way the mind process is that I create it in my mind, or whoever's in a kitchen as a professional, I think, create in their mind kind of like a painter, a palette of colors. But we have flavors that are in our mind. And then we imagine those flavors being paired with a piece of fish or a piece of meat or even a vegetable. And we kind of even imagine the evolution of that herb of spice in within an hour, what it's going to be. So that is the job of good cooks, good chefs. It's to do that.
Frank Bruni is my next guest. Didn't you go a lot further than many restaurateurs? You didn't just post a photograph for your staff to recognize him. You actually went to videos?
Well, Frank Bruni was a correspondent at the White House. He was working in Italy for, I don't remember which network, but the videos were out there, and therefore it was absolutely politically correct to go online and to get a video of Frank Bruni, who was a reporter and a public figure, really.
And watch his body language.
Yes, we observed. I mean, the picture for us was not enough, and we wanted to have more information about the future food critic of the New York Times at the time, and it's why we watched those videos.
Well, in the end, does it really matter if you know that the guest is a reviewer? You can't suddenly cook up a new sauce, for example. You can't change the recipe. You can't go out and buy a better piece of fish.
No. It's very little you can do because the way the New York Times works, or the way when Frank Bruni was coming to the restaurant, he was not announced. So basically, he will walk at 8:30 or 9 or whenever he wants, and then we realize it's him. But the fish is already in a house. Some of the vegetables are already cooked. The sauce, the base of the sauce, are made. And if you have a sauce that has been burned and takes hours of preparation, food critic or not, you cannot change.
Well, what I've heard is some restaurants actually just cook up a dish twice and send out the one that they think looks better.
Yes, I mean, they may do that. You know, at the restaurant, we have thousands of plastic spoons, and we test the food of 99% of what goes out of the kitchen. Food critic or regular clients, we do that because it's the only way to know if your food tastes good.
Have you adjusted to the current state of the economy at Le Bernardin? I understand that you considered reducing prices last January.
Well, I never considered reducing the price. What happened is that I observed something on the 23rd of December. One store on Madison Avenue was 90% off, and I don't say the brand, but that store was empty. And then Hermes, who doesn't discount at all, was packed. And I said, this is what people want. In a recession, people will go for the best value. If you give something which is amazing, and they will pay for it. And therefore, we never bargain our price, and I think we took the right path.
It does help if you have had 4 stars from the New York Times for many, many years.
Of course.
You're the chair of City Harvest Food Council, and you work with other chefs and restaurants to bring better food and more food to the homeless and the hungry in the city. Are you seeing more of a demand now?
It's a lot of demand, obviously, because a lot of people have lost their jobs. City Harvest doesn't only feed homeless. They feed people who have families and jobs and so on. So we decided actually in January, when it was really the heart of the crisis, to give $1 per person who will dine at Le Bernardin. And we anticipated to give throughout the year, by that process, to give $100,000 to City Harvest. And I think we are going to give $100,000 to City Harvest.
Meanwhile, if you can't make it to Le Bernardin, although it is one of the great restaurants of the world, you can watch Eric Repair on his new show called Avec Eric, which debuts this coming Sunday at 4:30 on Channel 13 here in New York. What a great pleasure it's been to talk with you again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an enormous pleasure for me, too. ¶¶